Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Colombo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Colombo.
Hi, everyone in America and around the world. Thank you so much for listening to Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. here on the West Coast in the good old USA or around the world online, as all shows are taped live and they are archived. So you can also find many of them on YouTube by typing in Colombo Chronicles and subscribe. That's a new channel, so support it. And so it's also streaming there too. So we're happy about that. And did you know the clock is ticking? It's tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock in the House of Representatives. They just voted to ban TikTok. And I don't think President Trump is happy about it because he feels it would create more support for Facebook. And so he opposes it, but that doesn't mean it is approved yet by the Senate. It will go to the Senate for a vote, and if it passes in the Senate, then it will go to President Joe Biden, who stated he would sign the bill into law. So we'll see. The clock is ticking. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. What do you think? Do you think that we should ban TikTok? What do you think about China controlling TikTok and also gathering information on Americans, especially young Americans? So that's a decision that the Senate will have to make, and President Biden already said he would sign it. So on that note, I want to welcome you to Colombo Chronicles. We are going to be entering into the world of authors, and we have a very dynamic author and expert with us today. And his name is Dr. Paul D. Corona. And he is a Southern California-based physician who is reshaping the future of psychiatry and family medicine. With over 30 years of medical experience, Dr. Corona is not your typical physician. Starting his career in family medicine, he seamlessly transitioned into psychiatry, ultimately pioneering an approach he calls mind and body healing. And I'm really excited about this because as a licensed esthetician who formerly owned a spa and certified aromatherapist and reflexology, I'm anxious to get his opinion on those de-stressing treatments because they've only become popular probably after the year 2000 in America. Prior to that, it was more of the wealthy, the rich people who received those treatments because they could afford it. but today, anyone can. So we'll get his take on that. And he's authored three books in his mind. Oh, it's My Mind and Body Healing. That's My Mind and Body Healing. And it's a series. And in his latest book, The Corona Protocol, he unlocks revolutionary insights into the treatment of mental health, challenging conventional methods that have been stagnant for decades. And so we will be back after this important message to enter into the world of authors and experts with our dynamic guest, Dr. Paul D. Corona. And we are going to find out some tips on how to stay healthy, not just in body, but also the mind. So stay with us and don't touch that dial, because we will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe.
I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Been on their trail for a very long time now as the legendary advocate for justice who started that particular volunteer system many years ago, leading a grassroots movement with members across the country seeking a justice for all. I know it's a beautiful thought and a beautiful statement. Not everyone obviously gets justice, so we are hoping and praying to improve the nation's judicial system so that we can all be treated equally in courts of law. But we do have some wonderful judges and lawyers who work very hard, and public defenders. So it's not about them. It's just about receiving justice for all, not just some. But on that note, we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts. I told you a little bit about Dr. Paul D. Corona, a Southern California-based physician, is reshaping the future of psychiatry and family medicine. In fact, I used to work for many years ago, Dr. Harriet Kaplan in the crisis clinic. So this is a very, very important subject. I can't stress it enough, especially with the challenging times we're in today with the economy and broken homes and so forth. So we do need to be very aware of our health physically and mentally. That's our responsibility. So if you're tired of a one-size-fits-all mental health solution, then Dr. Corona offers an unconventional yet tried-and-true approach to psychiatry, which includes off-label use of medications, combined treatment methods, and aggressive strategies that actually get results. Above all, he believes that mental health treatment is not about a quick fix, but a carefully calibrated balance that leads to holistic healing. So let's enter into the world of authors and experts, and let's see what Dr. Corona has to say. Hi, Dr. Paul Corona. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rose. Great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, good. Well, this is an interesting topic to not just me, but to everyone, because I've always believed in mind, body, and spirit as an esthetician, aromatherapist, and reflexology, and saw people who actually didn't even know they were carrying around that kind of stress until they sat up and had tears in their eyes sometimes. So this is very important, especially in today's challenging times. And so you have what is called the Corona Protocol. And the first thing I wanted to ask you is, what makes Dr. Corona's treatment methods revolutionary in the realm of psychiatry?
Well, as you said in the opening, I started in family medicine in the early 90s. I was always interested in mental health, but I decided on being a family doctor because I just wanted to thought I would just be able to live everything and be a more well-rounded physician. And during the 90s, some really exciting medications came out, beyond the typical SSRI.
Oh, I don't mean to interrupt you, but can you speak a little bit louder? There's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, so I basically, with the starting family medicine in the 90s, there were some really new medications that came out that were very exciting, beyond the typical SSRI, like Zoloft and Lexapro. And I started to see also a connection when I was helping their stress and their mood that their bodies were... That I hadn't been reading about, and I hadn't seen it in books and journals. And I think it was because, as a family doctor, I was really looking at the body and the physical side, and I think maybe psychiatry misses that, but they don't really focus on that. Whereas most family doctors understand the physical side, but they don't understand the connection with the mind. So after about a decade of practice, I decided to basically split away, and I knew that what I was discovering was really revolutionary. And so when I started writing my first books in 2002, then I wrote my first three books over 12 years called Healing the Mind and Body, and the trilogy. So I started with one book, and then it ballooned into the second and then to the third, because I realized
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I for some reason you're cutting in and out is...
Want me to switch to a hand? It's okay if I switch to like a handheld phone?
That would be fantastic.
Can you help me? Just like that. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you much better. Thank
there
you.
We go.
I wanted everybody
there
to hear what you had to say.
Sorry about that.
So let's start over again.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's no problem. It's the way it is in life. We have things, issues, and stuff. But we go over them.
So,
I'd like to start at the beginning so people can get the gist. So go ahead.
Yeah, so basically I started in family medicine. I just didn't know what I wanted to do back then. I just thought I really liked everything that I went through in medical school. But during the 90s, I was really turned on to psychiatry because new medications came out beyond the traditional SSRIs like Lexapro, Zoloft, Prozac. And I started to see a connection that when I was giving certain medications to certain people for their mood, like anxiety, depression, that their bodies were feeling better, and their fibromyalgia was going away, and their IBS, their headaches, their neck and shoulder tension, all the areas where people store stress. And so I was starting to see, there's this link between stress and the body. And during the 90s, I started doing so much of this more and more. And I was seeing that most doctors weren't picking up on it. I knew because I was reading journals, I was looking at textbooks, I was talking to doctors at conferences and lectures and trying to pick their brains, and I just didn't see other doctors picking up on this. And I think it's because most my reasoning is because family doctors don't really think about the mood part, and I think psychiatrists don't really think about the body part. And so early about 2000 or so, when I decided to split away and give up on family medicine and move into what I call mind-body medicine. And so I started writing my first book in about 2002 or 3, and that led to three books over the next 12 years. They're called Healing the Mind and Body, the trilogy. In my first three books, I basically just wrote everything I could about the science of what I do, why, and so they're very, they're 1,200 pages total, so it's a lot of books. But that's when I really started to see that I was discovering things that just weren't that other doctors weren't doing. And then that's led to the next two books. I wrote two books then because I want to teach. So I wrote two books that aren't out yet. They're kind of waiting in the wings for now. And then this most current book I wrote, I just decided that I wanted to write one last book before I give up on writing for a while. And that's that Corona Protocol.
Yes, and so when you mentioned, that doctors weren't interested, I can verify that because I had a spa, and I would go to certain doctors and try to network with them, And they just, you know, they said, we don't really, you know, do anything like
that.
You know, that's holistic or natural, or we just deal you know, treatments and medication. So that is a true statement. But then they did jump on the bandwagon in the late 90s and early 2000s, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now they have their names on skincare products as well. So they have become very interested in it. And so that mm-hmm. really helps, you know, what you are researching and mm-hmm. utilizing in your books. So what about the controversy of off-label use? Why is this a rule rather than an exception in your practice?
Yeah, if doctors aren't prescribing off-label, they're definitely not doing it right. So what off-label really means is, if, for example, if medication gets approved by the FDA, the government, for a certain indication, let's say, and pretty much all the antidepressants are indicated for depression, not for anxiety disorders, not for pain, and not for all the other things I use them for. And the company can't say anything. They can't talk about these things. If it's not indicated in the study, they can't talk about it. And the government restricts that. So off-label just means that using medications for indications that they weren't originally meant to be used for, but that they work really well for. So we kind of discover that in practice when we start working with these medications that, oh, it can do that. Oh, my gosh, it can do this. Exactly. It's all off-label. You know, there's no medication indicated for fibromyalgia or for irritable bowel syndrome, but I have high success with treating those things when doctors just don't know what to do with that. And well, you know, it's you know, because you know, a lot of doctors really don't understand about this connection that the brain, the body, the you know, it's all, everything's connected in the body. And so that's the gist of off-label prescribing. Well, like I like to jokingly say, I don't like to get medical advice from attorneys or the government. I like to get medical advice from doctors who understand how to practice medicine.
Exactly. So what about the critique of conventional psychiatry? Why do you believe the traditional psychiatric model is flawed?
Well, it's been just so boring, in a sense. When I first started practice and started reading psychiatric textbooks, and then as I've done it over the last few decades, nothing ever changes. You know, everything stays the same. For example, a simple, you know, they believe SSRIs are the first line for everybody, pretty much. I disagree, and I've disagreed for 30 years on that. And that's just one simple statement. And the fact that I don't believe that would be considered a heresy. Well, what do you mean? That everyone does that. Well, not me. Because I discovered that there's better medications. And so that's just one thing. The other thing is just how slow psychiatry is. Let's start this. And they have this notion that everything takes like 4 to 8 weeks to work, and it's just not true. It's never been true. So there's all these like rules in psychiatry that I just never believed in, because I learned differently, and I was always confused. Oh, why do they think that? That's not true. You know, and so that's, so basically, so everything is way too slow. Everything, you know, they don't know how to combine things together. So I like to combine medications together with different mechanisms of action. They do different things, you know. And again, remember, the thing about medications is, I mean, it's what I do, but medications are not what people think they are. They actually balance the nervous system. But learning how to work quickly. So I get very quick results with my patients, very safe, very effective, very quick. We call augmentation, combining medications when needed. So I'm able to typically get people completely well, what we call remission, within usually 2 to 3 visits, you know, so within maybe a month or two at the most. I'm able to really get almost all my patients to optimal. And optimal means back to their old selves again. This is me from years ago. Or some people say, I've never felt this good. I've never really understood what normal feels like.
So is that also a combination with healthy foods and supplements, or just treatment?
Absolutely. Yeah, and like, as you mentioned, aromatherapy, reflexology. See, medications are what I do. That's my specialty. But, you know, and I'm a Western-trained doctor. But does that mean that it's the only? No, absolutely not. I mean, I've worked with, you know, holistic healers. I've worked with chiropractors. I believe in highly in acupuncture. I'm a huge advocate for exercise. I talk to all my patients about exercising for stress reduction, for their health, eating right, eating healthy. So there, yeah, and then therapy, you know, if you need therapy, if you need to see a psychologist to work through some issues for the past, absolutely do it. If you have trauma, you know, you've gone through some bad trauma, you know, there's some really good therapies for that. So yeah, medications are just one part. And do all my patients need medications? No, actually, I don't. There's some patients I see, and I think, you know, I don't think you need this. I just think you need this or that, or you need to see someone else, or, you know. So, but yeah, but I do prescribe a lot of medications because it is what I do. But, you know, like I said, I call medications a different take on holistic medicine, because they really help the body heal itself, because all they're doing is attaching to the nervous cells and rebalancing neurochemicals that are out of balance. And people can't help when they go out of balance, because the reasons that happens, they have no control over that.
Mm-hmm. So I know I saw some patients who were so medicated, they were turned into like zombies, and
right.
I always remember that. It just kind of stayed in my brain, and it was pretty mm-hmm. frightening to see people walking around like zombies, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
at least back then, that was the key medications that appeared for people who really were I guess more difficult patients to deal with.
Right.
So yeah, so anyway, the role of primary care in psychiatry. How does a family medicine background bring a unique perspective to what you are doing?
Yeah, and I'll answer that, but real quickly on what you just said, absolutely. Also, that was worse years ago when we only had a finite number of medications. But any doctor who's treating a patient and gets them zombified, you know, they're not doing it right. They're over-medicating. They're giving them the wrong medication. So basically, that should not be the case. If someone's treated correctly, no one should be feeling like a zombie or brain control or anything like that. Now, as far as family practice and primary care, I think we're in the best position to do what I do, because of the fact that we see so many patients that suffer with stress and depression, and there's just frankly not enough psychiatrists around to treat everybody. So I think primary care is in a really unique position. And there's also a lot of providers like physician's assistants and nurse practitioners out there. And so this is why I wrote the two books before the Corona protocol. I wrote two smaller books for doctors and prescribers, because my intention is for this to do really well, and then for me to get a name out there and then start a training course. I really want to go into teaching, because I think that's the only way that I feel that I can share what I've learned in a really structured course for prescribers to learn. Because, you know, psychiatrists aren't doing that. I mean, what I'm doing is very unique, and I don't see any other doctors doing that. And so I just feel the obligation with what I've learned that I need to get out there and make even a bigger difference, because I'm only able to see so many people, and it frustrates me, because I know how many people are out there suffering. I know that they can be helped, and I just want to do whatever I can.
Well, I think that's great, because everything changes. I mean, you know, all traditions, all ways of doing things, and new techniques and new thoughts mm-hmm. and ideas and concepts, you know, start to evolve, which you are taking forward, because it's not easy to do, like you said, when there's so many people that mm-hmm. need help and you only have so many hours in the day, plus writing is
right.
tedious and long. I'm a writer, I know that. And so then how do you feel about the supplements and the other therapies you kind of mentioned on that right now? Do you really think they're useful, and do you think that most, not maybe you, but what about others, psychiatrists or doctors, believe that they're just money-making techniques?
It can be probably both. You know, again, as you said, unless some doctors get incentivized, hey, if you sell these supplements out of your office, you make a profit, and so I'm sure there's some incentivizing of selling things that. But oh, no, I believe that there's patients have told me that they've benefited from supplements. You know, for example, like 5-HTP or St. John's Wort or SAMe, I mean, there's serotonin supplements, there's tryptophan, there's GABA, there's a lot of things out there that natural products that can help. Do they have the power and the punch of psychotropics that I work with? No, they don't. In my experience, they don't. But they can help somewhat with symptoms, and or if medications are only doing so much, sometimes adding those in can help. So no, yeah, you know, again, I'm a Western doctor. I don't have all the answers, and I know that there's other providers. Like I said, you have experience in reflexology and aromatherapy. I don't, so I don't know about those things like you do because I wasn't trained in those things, and I don't have experience with those things. But I've had a lot of people who had been benefited, and like I said, acupuncture. I've seen a lot of people benefit from that, and the Chinese herbs and supplements that they give. And so, I have one solution. I think it's worked really, really well for my patients because my success rate is so high. But this doesn't mean I'm the only game in town.
Well, none of us are, but at least we're trying.
Yeah, exactly. We do our best.
Yes, to do our best to make a little difference in the world. What about your holistic health in modern times? You touched on that, but do you really believe that your techniques resonate with the trending focus on holistic health? Because they have a holistic health conventions now, too, with so many new books and ideas and people like yourself who share share that information.
Yeah.
Do you attend those conventions?
I haven't. I've been so busy. I mean, with writing 6 books in 20 years and a full practice and family life, I just, you know, it's, I haven't traveled in a long time. It's hard for me to do the conventions, you know, even like the psychiatric conventions. I get invited to a lot of things. I just don't go. I probably should, you know, to learn more about other things besides what I do. But yeah, but hopefully now that I'm going to take a break from writing finally, now I will have more time to do things. I'd love to do some traveling and do a book tour. I'd love to do things like that to get out there and make myself known, you know, because I think if that happens, then it's more likely that I'll be able to be accepted to teach.
Yes, they also let you sell your books there, too, so that's another opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I've met doctors,
yeah,
at those conventions,
exactly,
and got them signed autographs and
that's
so
true.
Forth. Yeah,
that's true.
That's good promotional area there, too, for you. And so what about addressing societal problems through psychiatry? Can early intervention prevent societal issues like the school shootings and suicide? And I wanted to add on what your opinion is if you don't mind answering. These kids have been watching videos in their bedrooms, and they can also play games with their friends, and they don't have to be present in the bedroom. They can be at their home and play games and hear each other and so forth through these video games that have been going on, I think, since the 80s and become more advanced. And so kids are more addicted. And so they're shooting fictional cartoon characters of police or other people on the screens. So in with this question, I was wondering, do psychiatrists and psychologists see that as a problem?
I certainly do. And including social media is a huge problem, in my opinion, with our young kids, and their brains are developing, and they're exposed to these dopamine surges when they get likes and when they're playing video games. You know, and if you look at the title of my book, it's The Corona Protocol, A Scientifically Proven Medical Solution to Stop Addiction, Bullying, Homelessness, School Shootings, and Suicide, 30 Years in the Making. So when I wrote this current book, and it's taken me about 4 or 5 years to write this, it's a storytelling book. So I tell stories about different people would have different. And so I have a story about a school shooter. I have a story about someone who commits suicide, a story about a homeless guy, a story about an addict. So yes, all these things are related. And I think early intervention was definitely with shooters. Obviously there are major mental health issues going on there. But, you know, if you look at the history with a lot of these shooters, there's a lot of warning signs, you know, online and obviously we don't want kids to have access to guns. And so we need responsible parenting and to make sure they don't have access to those things. But yeah, I think the desensitizing with video games and I think the crudeness and the reduction in my opinion of values and morals in our country over recent years has really caused a lot of problems. Like I said, social media, there's so much bullying going on and everything's gotten worse in my opinion in this country and in the world too, but in this country I'm focusing on things have just gotten I think worse over time.
I have to agree with that. And as an advocate for justice who witnessed, things getting better through grassroots movements, and then they expanded mm-hmm. and more groups formed, and we were exposing, certain issues that need to be addressed by lawyers and doctors and politicians and so forth and judges. But I have to agree. I look at it now and I'm like, how did it get so bad? I mean, we were out there, pushing for, morals and ethics and all that. And we were taught it in school. They're not taught that anymore in school. And so, we're just looking at it and saying, how could it possibly have gotten so bad? Well, I think we have to push the pendulum back and not stop and keep doing what we're doing to do the best we can to help these kids. And so, what about societal problems through psychiatry? Do you think that early intervention, which they have a lot of different areas of intervention now with drugs, alcohol, whatever, divorce, prevent societal mm-hmm. issues like in the schools and so forth?
Oh, absolutely.
With the bullying?
Yeah, and then you just take... Yeah, I mean, each of the subtitles, I mean, let's look at addiction. Well, addiction basically is, self-medicating an underlying mental health issue. That's what leads to addiction. Bullying, a lot of that in adults and kids online at schools, causing a lot of mental health issues there. And I think the mental health issues are the person who gets bullied, and also the bully themselves has mental health issues most likely. Then homelessness. Well, homelessness is a combination of typically addiction and mental health, most of them, not all of them, but most. School shooting, obvious, these are extremely troubled kids. And then usually boys. And then suicide. Well, suicide obviously is major mental health issues under. Yeah, so I think if we intervene with all of these things, it definitely help. That's the problem. I mean, I think we like with the homeless situation, they're talking about giving them housing and this and that, which is fine. But hey, how about getting them off their addictive substances? How about getting them off their fentanyl? How about getting them their mental health? If you get them out, their mental health issues settled, maybe the addiction we can tackle that too. And I think we have to get to the underlying cause. But yeah, I have major concerns with the video games just getting proliferating and just getting so kids are spending just hours and days and weekends on these video games and not getting. I mean, remember when we were young, people used to go out and play and ride their bikes and I grew up in the 70s and then went in the 80s when I went to college and med school, and I don't think things used to be like this back then. I mean, yeah, we had problems, of course, but it's gotten just dramatically worse. And I mean, I blame government. I think the excessive of government hasn't helped, in my opinion. Failing public schools,
government. It hasn't helped at all.
It's not helped at all. Yeah. So I think kids are not getting a proper education.
A lot of, Yeah, they're duplicating a lot of things. The agencies that do the same thing, and they're not actually resolving these issues that you're concerned about and I'm concerned about. And we're seeing the results, which is frightening, actually, if we don't do something about it, and including secure those borders. And so that isn't helping. So
we're on the same page, you and I.
I want to go down there and shut them myself.
Yeah.
So why do you feel that there's a need to not just educate the patients, and there's a need also to educate the healthcare providers? Because that seems like if you don't do one, how's it going to work if you don't do the other, to me? So that is a question there.
Yeah. Well, the need is so great. I mean, there's so many people suffering, and it's been a heavy weight over the years for me, because this is what drives me to keep writing. And people are like, aren't you done? I was like, no, I'm not done yet. I have to keep going. Why do I keep doing it? Because I'm just driven, because I know that there's so many people who need help out there, and there's only so many providers who understand what they're doing. And so that's what drives me, and is knowing that, and again knowing the fact that, okay, I can write books, that's fine, but only so many people are going to read it, and if they go to their doctor and the doctors know what to do, then they leave feeling hopeless, you know, or if they go to their primary care, and again even if they get referred to a psychiatrist, that doesn't necessarily mean the psychiatrist is going to do that much better job than primary care. In my opinion and my experience, you know, a lot of psychiatrists do things, you know, again, like I told you before, the same old, and they don't change things, and they don't do anything really exciting as far as treatment strategies. And the problem is, when people have a bad experience, they drop out and they say, nope, that's not for me. And then if someone else tries to say, well, how about, nope, I've already tried that. And that person might be lost forever. You mean that person may never be open to treatment after having bad experiences. And it makes me sad. It makes me sad because, you know, I know we can do better.
We can always do better. There's never anybody that's perfect, and we can always just keep striving to do better and give a helping hand to people. And we're not going to solve everybody's problems. We're not going to be able to help everybody, but those we help is very, very important, because they're going to become productive citizens and have that self-esteem they need to move on with their lives. And that's so important, because also a lot of people don't have anybody to, as a support system at home, so who don't understand their problems. So that's why they need you and psychologists and psychiatrists to help them, because a lot of the kids today are from broken homes. And, you know, the single parent's tired. They're working all day. They have to take them to sports. They have to have dinner. So it's a vicious circle. And so I believe what you're doing is very, very important. And you could also do a class online, too, you know.
Well, that's what I think I would do. I think that'd be most effective. I think it would be an online type of thing. And I, you know, and basically teaching by, we call case studies, where I could just take a patient and kind of go through visit by visit. And that's with my book, The Corona Protocol, my recent book, the stories I tell 30 original stories about people, but I kind of start from the beginning, and I kind of walk people through a case. Or I call a case story, where the beginning, when I first started seeing a person, until the very end, and then what I do along the way. And so I kind of basically outline what people say, what is the Corona Protocol? What's my way of doing things? And in my book, I there's so many different stories there I cover pretty much everything that I can think of medication wise, and other alternative stuff too.
Well, I'm one of those people who watch these little short courses that the doctors give on different things. Even if I don't have the problem, I want to know how to prevent it so I don't get the problem. Mm-hmm. So I watch them, you know, and I listen and I take notes, you know, and what causes this, what causes that, what foods, you know, and because it's not just for me, you know, it's for my family or friends when they say, oh, I got this problem. Well, I have the notes here. from Dr. So-and-so. And you can tune it on if you want, you know, on the clips in on Zoom or YouTube or whatever. I mean, it's really informational. I mean, educational. You may not even need it, and hope you don't need it. But you wonder why people get all of these diseases, you know, and so you gather a lot of knowledge through that. So that would be great if you did that. And so you have a patient's journey, and so how do patients typically find you, and what keeps them coming back?
Well, from day one of my practice, I've always believed strongly in customer service. And, you know, people will probably be nodding out there when I tell them that their customer service is usually pretty bad at doctor's office. You can't get in to be seen very quickly. They don't call you back when you call them. So that's very typical. I've always stressed, like, communication with my patients. I spend a lot of time with them. You know, I'll spend an hour with a new patient, like 20 minutes with a follow-up, and maybe 30 minutes. So I spend a lot of time with them because I get a real good history, and I ask a lot of questions and listen. It's also about listening to patients. You got to listen to the details. And so that's part of it, is just returning calls every day, every email, every day without fail. And like I said, patients are just not used to that. And, you know, as far as finding me, you can go on my website. You know, I am taking new patients. I'm busy, but I never too busy to take new patients on. And from not only in Southern California where we are, but also across the country. So, you know, we can see each other virtually. So if you go on my website, Dr. Paul Corona, MD.com, that's DR for doctor, MD for medical doctor. So Dr. Paul Corona, MD.com, I have everything on there, blogs, testimonials, stuff, you know, a link to go to Amazon to get my book. And that's the best way. And all my information, my phone number, its address, everything's on there. So.
Fantastic. So I have a last question for you, and it's about this new advanced telemedicine and how do you adapt to practicing in the virtual world, especially in the wake of the pandemic, which was horrifying, which opened the world of the telemedicine to being more accessible and obtainable to people. So how do you adapt to that?
Yeah, I think it's been good in a sense. I mean, because I think people save on time. It's more convenient. I mean, the downside is not maybe as personal of a touch without being the person there to shake their hands, hug them or whatever. But I think it's the convenience for patients, saving on gas money, saving time. And because most of what I do is talking and listening. And so what I do is very doable, you know, by phone. And it also gives me the flexibility of seeing people who move out of my area. A lot of patients, as you know, move out of California for good reason. I don't blame them, you know.
Still moving.
So I'm stuck here, but I don't blame them for leaving. But I think people move out of the area, people who never met me before, but they started being a patient and they're on the East Coast or wherever. That's how I basically I can see a lot of people still, and I can get people in quickly, and, you know, we work pretty quickly here.
Well, that's great, and it sounds fantastic to me that you're combining natural health and foods and drinks and all the treatments that are holistic, like room therapy and reflexology. Try it, you know, maybe it works for you. You know, everybody's different. I think an open mind like that is fantastic, because in the past it was closed mind, but I love seeing doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists coming forward and saying, well, maybe I can, you know, maybe it does do something for the body, and they should go get a reflexology and aromatherapy treatment, and they would find out for sure. But I would like you to give one more time your names of your books and also your website before we close.
Yeah, and then I have four books available. So the first three books are called Healing the Mind and Body, the trilogy. And my fourth and fifth book, my fourth book will be coming out hopefully within the next year, the Corona Protocol Prescriber's Guide, and book five will be the Corona Protocol, three Secrets to Success. And then my most current book, and I think this current book is my best book. It's very readable. People who've read it have given great reviews. It's the Corona Protocol, a scientifically proven medical solution to stop addiction, bullying, homelessness, school shootings, and suicide. 30 years in the making. People are saying that the stories are riveting and they can't put it, it's a page turner. And I've always wanted to write fiction, and I have another book I'll be writing at some point, another fiction, but I've always wanted to write fiction. So this was my first crack at it, and I think it went well.
Well, I think it's going great and fantastic, and I think it will continue to be successful. And I want to thank you so much, Dr. Paul D. Corona, for sharing your information with us and for helping so many patients get well, basically.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you so
I appreciate
much.
That.
You're welcome. God bless you and
you
have a great day. You too.
God bless you too.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. And Dr. Paul D. Corona, Corona, you can look him up online, has left the building, and we're going to take a little break, and we'll have a few more minutes, and we'll talk about the issues of the day today. So don't touch that dial. We will be right back.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Colombo Chronicles Live, because there are so many things going on in our world today that it is absolutely difficult for most people to even try to figure out what is the most important thing that is happening. Well, I think one of the most important things that is happening is the fact that we have these open borders, and 320,000 more additional illegals have been brought into our country at taxpayers' expense. And the problem is that Americans can't even afford, or they have to decide with families, especially single parent families, are they going to buy more groceries? Are they going to put gas in their car to get to work? Are they going to pay the electric bill in full so they can turn on the heat or the air conditioner? These are very, very serious issues today, because what is happening is that when you bring in millions of people who don't speak English, many of them, who come from crime-ridden countries where there are gangs, where there are jihadists, terrorists, cartels, into the United States of America, we're going to have more criminals who are unvetted, non-vetted, and without background checks, who cannot be detained and deported, because under President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden and USAG Eric Holder, they changed detain and deport with background checks and vetting if they entered our country illegally, which is the law. It is, IS, the law of the constitutional laws and the federal and state laws, that illegal means illegal. Illegal entry means illegal entry. You don't belong in our country. You're trespassing on our soil, and you are threatening the lives of everyone who lives on those border states by migrating non-vetted, no background check for cartels, gang, jihadists, terrorists that the FBI has identified, traffickers, traffickers of children, traffickers of females, organ harvesters. And they do organ harvesting without any medication for pain. And then, I don't know, maybe the child or the adult dies. They found 40 bodies about a month ago along the borders. But MSM isn't talking about it. And I think it was Mayorkas who said we are not to call them illegal migrants or illegal immigrants or whatever, but illegal immigrants, illegal migrants, illegal aliens is in all the law books across the United States of America. All the law books on crime, it is defined in all the law books, what illegal means, what illegal entry means, what illegal immigrants are, what illegal migrants are, what illegal aliens are, and that's the law of the land. So when is enough enough? Because what is happening and why you're having to decide whether you're going to put gasoline in your car, you single parent, or you're going to buy more groceries for your kids, or you're going to take them to the movies because now you're on a tight budget because we're having to pay for, I am guessing, 50 million or close to it, illegals in our nation from all over the world. And as the sheriff said and the FBI said, they're not all from Mexico. They're coming from Venezuela where they have organized criminal syndicates in our country now, where they're coming from China, who's been sold businesses in California when Newsom was a mayor and was not reported by MSM that the owner is linked to the Chinese mafia. And then we have CCP labs in our country, according to the FBI, and we have the Venezuelan organized criminal syndicate in our country now, their members. And do you know what they all do? All these people from Afghanistan, Africa, wherever they're coming from, these crime-ridden nations, third world nations, they are, wherever they're getting their money, sending it back to their countries and to their masters and drug lords and godfathers. And so that is why you're taxes, my taxes, your taxes, and the seniors and the elderly who are in Social Security are paying more, and they're taking more taxes out of that, which you already paid while you were working. This was to be your government mandated retirement account, now going to the illegals in our country. And in 2021, I posted on Facebook that I believe the MSM was not telling the truth or the government about how many illegals are in our country, because they've kept saying it was 11 or 12 million. They're still saying it today. No, I said there has to be at least, after Obama opened the borders, close to 30 million illegals inside of our country. And 2 weeks later, Stanford University posted on Facebook that they did a study, and their study came up with 29.5 illegal aliens in our country, 29.5 million. So now that they've been flying in Palestinians tied to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE and Al-Qaeda, and so forth, and Iran, they've been flying them in to the USA secretly at night since 2009, every single night, taxpayers' expense, diverting our taxes to fly them in, and then DHS puts them on buses at night and then scatters them around the country. Well, now they're flying them in from all these other third world crime-ridden nations, or busing them in, or having them take trucks and trains or boats, whatever way they can get here, they're here. And they're still coming. And so the American people are coming last. The American children are being bullied, walking down the street, going to in school, in some schools across this country. The teachers are being bullied. And it's not getting better, it's getting worse. So I want you to read a book that I wrote recently, late 2022, it came out early 2023. It's called Is America Under Martial Law? And it asks a question, and I want you to read this book. It's on Amazon.com. You can order it from a bookstore, Barnes & Noble, but easy to go to Amazon.com. It's in paperback and Kindle. What does yellow fringe really mean on the U.S. flag? Compilation of theory? It's a compilation of facts, laws, and agendas that have been implemented and are being implemented in the USA that are antithetical to the United States Constitution. Because open borders are lawlessness, direct intentional lawlessness by lawmakers, not by the law enforcers, because they aren't allowed to enforce the law. It's by the lawmakers and those who head up the Department of Justice agencies tying the hands of the law enforcers, who the criminals have more rights than they do. Think about that. They have the right to snub their nose at our law enforcers. They have killed our law enforcers, Border Patrol. They have given the coronavirus to Border Patrol agents, measles. And now there's another outbreak of chickenpox. In Germany, you probably don't know, there was an outbreak when they invaded Germany around 2009-10, after Obama was in office, because they did the same thing in Europe that they're doing here. And they had an outbreak of hepatitis C, but the news is not reporting all of this. And you really have to pay attention. So I want you to read this, Is America Under Martial Law? Because you need to understand and research, and you need to figure out how they are getting away with violating United States constitutional laws, which are the supreme laws of the land, without being held liable or accountable when they swore an oath to uphold, defend, and protect the United States of America and defend the safety and welfare of every child and legal American in this nation. They are not doing it. They are protecting, aiding, abetting, and harboring unlawfully, probably, in my opinion, getting close to 50 million illegals in our country. Whether it's 12 million, 30 million, or 50 million, it should be no illegals in our country, because try to cross over in their borders and find out what happens to you. There's no other country in the world that has open border policy. And we don't have it either. They made it up. So anyway, on that note, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, the House of Congress has banned it. Let's see what the Senate does, if they will ban it, and if Biden's going to keep his word, if it gets passed, and sign it into law. We'll just have to wait and see. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. God bless everyone in the world, and may God keep his hand on the United States of America and restore everything that has been taken from us.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Columbo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Columbo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.